Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily French Show. I am your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you doing, sir?
Hi, Nicholas. I'm okay. Yourself?
I'm all right as one can be on a Monday. And we're also joined today by Mr. Michael Morris. Michael, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you indeed. Coming to you from a sunny Western Cape. And in Western Cape, I see the ANC here says that we're missing out on many, many opportunities and advantages of ANC policy. And what a what a shame that we run by the DA. Anyway, there you go.
Indeed.
It's like the national minimum wage, which is apparently not paid in Western Cape.
Yeah. We know we're in election time, don't we? So, yeah.
Yes. When well, actually, I think pretty much all of our stories have to do with electioneering today. Starting off with which, we're going to talk a little bit about President Ramaphosa giving a speech to business leaders where he talked about the urgent need to reform the economy. He says that the South African economy is dominated by five banks, FNB, Absa, Investec, Standard Bank, and Nedbank, and he accused them of having monopolistic control, which has excluded Black South Africans from pivotal roles in the financial sector. And we've seen some mumblings about this recently of a desire by the ANC to, as they describe it, transform the financial sector, which is one of the few sectors of the South African economy that has actually been relatively healthy, at least in comparison to much of the rest of the economy over the past couple of years. You know, if you look at our data in, for example, where jobs are created or what saw economic growth, it's usually the financial sector is in the positive rather than the negative. Ramaphosa at his speech said that it was also very important to work for business to work with government. He said, yes, we face unique challenges. We have endured 9 lost years of state capture that weakened our economy. In the last 5 years alone, we've suffered from the COVID-19 pandemic, destructive riots that erased 50 billion rand from our GDP. And devastating floods. Despite these setbacks, we recognize the ANC must undergo renewal to become an organization that is fit for purpose. So I think apparently the business leaders were sort of a bit mixed in response to this, which I think is different from how business has responded to the ANC in the past, with big business in particular being fairly quick to kind of fawn over the ANC, particularly with Ramaphosa at the helm. That attitude seems to have mostly dissipated, with a lot more skepticism coming through from business side. Terence, let me start with you. This is a story we've heard quite a few times before. Firstly, do you think there's any kind of reason for the timing behind the desire to kind of move on the financial sector here? And also, what do you make of the president's sort of claims about the financial sector being dominated by five banks? I'm not really sure how five things have a monopoly. That monopoly is one, but anyway, what do you make of this?
Well, you know, it's a combination of its sort of standard fare, transformation at all costs and all things as a goal in itself. Transformation being largely undefined, so that you can always have more of it. But look, I just, as you know, our viewers may have seen me like looking up in annoyed exasperation. Yes, we've heard all this. We've heard all this before. The 9 wasted years, or what, 5 of which I was your deputy president and in charge of cadre deployment and was praising the visionary leadership of Cyril Ramaphosa. But I'm afraid none of this reasonably washes anymore, because we are sitting with a systemic crisis that has been coming since the 1990s. And this is one area in which I will, give a partial get out of jail free. That's not a Freudian slip. Pass to former President Zuma. He didn't create the problem. He was riding a wave, and then he just took it to the next level. You can go back to the way that Fringe and Waller, for instance, torpedoed the arms deal investigation. you can go back to when an indeterminate number of MPs were busy crooking their travel vouchers, and how a list of those was never even made available. And interestingly, someone from the DA at the time told me that the issue there was not was actually deeper than people realized. It wasn't simply about people being crooked. It was about people who literally had no experience of managing money. That should have been a learning moment, but instead the ANC took a leaf out of Afrikaner nationalism and drew a logo around itself. And then, of course, we had our 9 lost years where our current UBEC reformist president wasn't too far away. And, we must work together. Once again, we've heard that since the 1990s. And I think something that our viewers might find entertaining is to realize that all this work together talk. We first had load shedding in what, about 2007? So that's about 15 years ago, more than that. Really took off a couple of years later. It took 15 years later before the private sector was granted the sort of legal right to generate. You know, who exactly wants to work with whom?
Right. The work together stuff always seems to be very much, you work on our terms. You have to do what we say. You know, you must listen to us, rather than, you know, some sort of genuine desire to actually work together. I mean, if you actually listen to a lot of ANC speeches or how the ANC talks in committee meetings and things, there's often this refrain about, you know, needing to defeat capital or discipline capital or constrain capital, these old sort of Marxist terms where businesses are viewed very much antagonistically as though they are engaged in a massive project to destroy the state, which I think it's probably there's a little bit more truth to that now than there has been for our entire last 30 years. But that's simply because businesses are worried that they might soon be toast if the economy keeps limping along as it is. Michael, what do you make of this? I mean, it is a bit concerning, I think, that the attack, that there seems to be now some pressure on the financial sector. And I'm sure some of this is electioneering. It's a kind of, you know, desire to appeal to the ANC's more radical base and say, look, you see, we're going to go to the financial sector and, I don't know, everyone's going to get cheap loans or something. It's kind of a bit of an unstated electoral promise, but I think that's the subtext in all of this. What do you make of Ramaphosa's comments here?
I think, I mean, in a sense, the most positive thing is the hesitance on the part of business, judging by some of the reporting there. And one can fully understand increasingly business leaders saying, well, bring the renewal first and then we'll think about working with you. There's a theme that Terence very often picks up on and exploits. And in fact, the intro of his piece on the Daily Friend today makes this kind of central framework to his discussion of corruption, where he says the ANC took power with the firm conviction that state power was the route to resolving the country's chronic socioeconomic deficits. And if you're familiar with Terence's work, you'll know that this is something he returns to often. The ANC's self-conception as the leader of the renewal, the transformation, the new South Africa, the democratic project, and it's sort of, you know, soldered into the wiring of the ANC that this is who we are, this is how we think, and it's very typical for them then to view the economy not as something that is operates best when it's free and unencumbered and able to exploit every opportunity, be dynamic, be innovative, and so on. The economy is something that's got to be managed and watched and suspected often of getting up to mischief and doing things out of sight that it shouldn't be doing. And so it's quite ironic in a way also that, you know, there's the suggestion of monopolistic behavior in the banking sector, whereas the truth is probably, I mean, I don't really know enough about banking in particular, but certainly the economy more broadly, is that one thing the ANC has managed to do over the past 30 years is actually to make it very difficult for businesses to succeed as businesses, simply going out there and making the economy flourish, developing new products and filling gaps in the market, doing whatever it is that business needs to do to survive and to flourish, and which in turn has a huge dividend for the rest of society, not only in jobs and incorporating people who've perhaps been outside of the economy for generations, now being drawn into the economy. This is the best way to do it. World history shows us over and over. So, you know, it is ironic that the one party that's really been a halter on development and growth in South Africa is the one that is now wanting to compel businesses in some way or other to work with it, instead of recognizing that what it needs to do is to stand back and free up the economy as far as possible. This is not, you know, it's not an anarchic kind of freedom that we advocate, but it clearly is really the very best kind to do the best things for society.
Right. I think there's a very solid argument to be made that the kind of concentration of the South African economy in larger businesses is due precisely to the policies that the ANC government has followed, particularly for the last 10 years,
exactly.
But in many ways for the last 30 years, because small new entrants, unless they're sort of affiliated to the state in some way, you know, they've had like a PE connection or something, they just get crushed. And so you end up with basically a bunch of super large businesses riding over, who are able to weather the sort of bad regulations, and everyone underneath is just locked out. Sorry, Terence, you were about to say.
Yeah, look, the issue in that respect is, you know, take the regulations away, just the hard sinews that make society possible, a supply of utilities, security for your physical security. You know, if you have to sort of provide those for yourself, provide your own little society around your business, you can you find it a lot easier to do if your balance sheet's measured with like 9 or 10 zeros than if you're a startup in deep skirt. And unfortunately, you know, this hurts. I think this hurts aspirant entrepreneurs in those areas where they are most needed and where, you know, government policy supposedly wants them. But you know, I think that what we have here is the sort of a ruling party, one faction of which, you know, believes that, you know, white monopoly capitalist scheming behind every behind every door. I really wish we had, let's say, better communists. guys who actually understood that you need capitalism to get to communism, so they're more or less okay with it. And you see, actually, some in Latin America, some of the big reformers actually came out of that tradition. And on the other hand, this kind of loose, untidy populist group that kind of want the blessings, but, you know, also reckon we've got power and we're going to use it. And they sort of, you know, read half an article in Time magazine about how South Korea's state was interventionist, so we're going to do it too. The problem is that, you know, and I think there is a great deal to be said for constructive state intervention, which makes me a bit of a heretic amongst some of our associates. But the point is that you need bureaucrats and civil servants who actually understand this. You know, I read somewhere that South Korea went from largely uneducated to having more PhDs per head of the population in 30 years. And many of those ended up working in their bureaucracy where they could, you know, push their developmental initiative, simply saying, we are a developmental state and we, you know. Yeah.
But this is exactly it, right? This is one of the things that Cater Deployment has done, is that Cater Deployment has prioritized political allegiance to the ANC over competence, over skills, over these things. So what have many of these people who could have gone on to be good civil servants done? Well, they prioritize political allegiance, because that's how you get ahead. It doesn't matter how educated you are. You can skate by on some dodgy kind of maybe governance certificate or something, as long as you have the right friends in the right places, which has been extremely toxic for the state, as we have seen over the last
Or as one study showed, a lot of civil servants spend their time trying to get an MBA, so that you can come out of a position where you've had some sense of responsibility and get into a corporate position or go overseas or wherever, and you actually have real responsibilities, and you can have a proper career there. But too much of our governance is just like sort of circling a block drain.
That's a very good image.
I'm going to say toilet, and of course, was probably too foul.
And nothing, of course, says business needs to work with us, and we need to cooperate together, like passing legislation that will allow the government to expropriate property without compensation. It's nothing to build trust, love, and appreciation between the business community and the government than something like that. I, of course, I'm jesting. But anyway, let's move on to our next story. And this is also connected to electioneering in a way. And that is that the DA is very upset with the ANC, for no surprises, of course. But specifically, they're upset that the ANC, in their opinion, is using government resources in order to fund its election campaign. They refer to a recording that someone appears to have leaked to them. It's not clear who, it's not clear where this recording was. There's very little detail about it. It's difficult to pin down or verify anything about it, but they have put it on YouTube, which you should be able to find. I think it's called Leaked Recording, Ramaphosa Wants to Dictate How Media Reports on Government and the ANC. Anyway, during this meeting, which it sounds as though a hidden microphone was used at some points in the recording, you can kind of hear like the sound of the microphone brushing up against someone's pocket or jacket or something like that. So it's not always super clear. You hear President Ramaphosa and a number of senior ANC people talking about their battle plan for the election. There's a lot of explicit talk about how ministers and ANC-led departments and provinces must submit plans of all the projects to be launched between now and the May 29 election, presumably to build some good publicity for the ANC. That government ministers must take out radio adverts promoting work done under the 30 years of ANC rule. And the DA's leader, John Steenhuisen, said, this new revelation is proof that the ANC is the ultimate emotional manipulator, gaslighting the South African electorate with false promises and smoke and mirrors at the taxpayers' expense, all to remain in power. One of the pieces of the leaked recording has Ramaphosa speaking specifically about the media and TV stations, saying how he goes on to kind of sound, as you put it in our pre-show discussion, Michael, like he's maybe going to say something fairly reasonable. He says, we want fair treatment from the media. Okay, fine. I mean, a lot of political parties say that. And in fact, while I don't think the ANC has been in that much danger of not getting fair treatment from the media, it's a completely legitimate thing to say. But then he goes on to say, we want more than fair treatment from the media. And later in the same discussion says, there will be a team of comrades who will be watching this space all the time. Michael, some of this is obviously just kind of electioneering stuff, which is, I think, there's always a little bit of blurring and fudging and that kind of thing by all governments, political parties all over the world about this stuff. But what do you make of this? I mean, this does suggest that the ANC is, I think, feeling a bit of heat, that it feels like it has to be sort of so explicit. What do you make of this story?
I think that's probably the most telling aspect of it, in a way, that we might not necessarily have heard this kind of sentiment expressed quite as boldly as he has expressed it, and I think his actual words were, we need more than fair or deserve more than fair coverage because we are the governing party. It's as if being in government actually does genuinely warrant a kind of gentler press or a more approving commentariat, but yeah, I think it does seem to suggest that the party is feeling a bit tender at the moment. I'm always conscious of the fact that as the election date approaches, one has to be very cautious about suggesting that everything that's happened up to now is an indication of what's going to happen. And the ANC is a bit like the National Party, I think, also past masters at winning elections, and they put in a huge effort towards the end. very clever politicking and all the usual scaldacry that goes on, which generally gets more votes. So, I mean, that's the worrying thing in a way, is that all this electioneering and all the nonsense that goes on does actually have an effect, and people do switch and not think clearly, and you know, are swayed by sentiments. But yeah, I think it does suggest a party that's feeling a little bit vulnerable. It's a pity that he could so easily have just stuck to the idea that we deserve fair treatment. We would have applauded that. We would have said that's exactly right. Government no less than the opposition. Fair treatment, especially from public broadcasters. This is taxpayers' money that's being spent on coverage. Other media, we would think that, you know, we'd certainly deserve some fair treatment from them too. But he just ruined that completely by undermining the principled position on this question. Yeah.
So two things. One is that it's always a little bit frustrating when something like this is put into the public space, because, I mean, I don't think this is fake, but, you know, you can't really verify anything about this. There's no details about, you know, when it was recorded or anything like that. I mean, maybe those details were released by the DA somewhere, but, you know, I haven't seen them if they have. And that's always a little bit kind of frustrating, because I don't know how always super seriously to take some of this stuff. But I think it does jibe quite closely with a lot of things ANC people have said in public, with regards to how they view the media or governance or that kind of thing, that there's a very much a blurring between the line of party and state. I don't think that's particularly a contentious point to make. Terence, the other aspect, of course, to talk about this is, you know, who recorded this? The DA claims it was an internal ANC meeting, in which case that means presumably someone inside the ANC recorded it to take Ramaphosa down or to make him look bad. I can only imagine the paranoia and chaos this might be causing inside the halls of Luthuli House.
Well, look, on the question of the ANC's approach to this, once again, this is a toilet bowl we've been circling for 30 years. Those of us with long enough memories can remember, you know, the media is against us, the inquiry and racism in the media, because there were stories about, what, elephants or something. And, you know, this is not a Ramaphosa thing. This was what Nelson Mandela was saying back in the day. I think maybe what's changed is at that point they wanted a kind of explicitly race and racially and politically engineered transformation. Yeah, and I think they were quite successful in certain publishing houses, and those would then organically support them. So it's not like they would be phoning up in the middle, you know, and saying you will run the story. It's just that it was kind of understood that this is a story that the people would, you know, need to hear, and things didn't work out. I mean, you know, it's one of the problems with trying to plan anything, especially when your mindset is stuck in the 1960s. Things move on. We don't buy broadsheets like we used to. We don't. A radio endures, but you know, you can have the SABC. You know, there's pretty much nothing there that you can't get anywhere else if you have a internet connection, which most South Africans now do. As to who leaked this, yeah, you know, I think that there are that there are numerous possibilities, but my sense of it is what may have happened, and this is pure conjecture, is that perhaps someone was taping this because, you know, his social circle, maybe his local branch, asked him to record this because they'd like to be in on the story. He then sends the recording on to, you know, 50 recipients, one of whom, you know, sends it on to somebody else. And then, you know, before we know it, everyone else has one. Look, you know, those who know me know that I get all of my information from watching movies like JFK. There's a wonderful story. There's a wonderful scene in that movie where Kevin Costner's character, the attorney Jim Garrison, is like laying out this conspiracy. And one of his team says, you know, like, Miss Junk, you sort of go believe that there's this conspiracy between the mob and the CIA and God knows who out through any Louisiana. How do you know who your mama was? Because your daddy told you. It's basically the same thing. I think looking for deep cover malls and whatever in South Africa might be taking it a step too far. I think, someone just recorded this without permission and sent it on. And before you know it, everybody knows what the deep secrets of the deep state are. And the thing is anyone surprised? Is anyone surprised?
No, I think that is the bottom line of this, is that it really does sound a lot like the way that not Ramaphosa necessarily, but a lot of other ANC senior figures have talked in the past about their relationship with media and taxpayers. Michael, any thoughts, final thoughts on this before we move on?
I mean, the other point is that, perhaps whoever recorded it thought of it quite approvingly. This is exactly the kind of message we want to hear our president broadcasting. It's
He's being
the
strong and
government
decisive.
being strong and decisive, and he's setting out exactly what we're going to be doing about it. The wretched
Yeah.
media getting it wrong.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Okay, so let us move on to our last story today. And this is another difficult story for the ANC, is that they seem to have lost their trademark case against the Nkonto-Sizwe Party. So the ANC claimed that it still owns essentially the sort of trademark for Nkonto-Sizwe, which was its military wing that was disbanded in the 90s. And that the name and logo should belong to the ANC, and therefore the MK Party couldn't use them. The High Court, however, criticized the ANC's failure to timely oppose the registration of the MK Party and logo prior to the announcement that Jacob Zuma was going to be running for the party. And this seems to have been one of the reasons why the ANC's legal challenges against MK have fallen flat, is that MK was registered, I think, in June of last year, I think I'm correct in saying, or at least it was quite, sort of halfway through last year. And the ANC didn't seem to notice until suddenly Jacob Zuma decides that this is his new political party that he's going to be leading forward. Also, the ANC has got to pay costs on this one, which I'm sure must sting. Terence, what do you make of this story? The ANC seems to have been really unsuccessful in challenging MK through the courts. It speaks to me of a kind of panic that I think they were really caught by surprise by the emergence of MK. And also, it's what the polling suggests is some real traction, particularly in KZN. What do you make of the story?
I think that it's all of a piece with, we talked about the decline of governance capacity. It's also, I think, the decline of political capacity in the ANC. That, their relationship with Zuma has been a, well, talking about the sort of current leadership's relationship with Zuma has been this kind of melange of appeasement, chastisement, but let's not challenge too directly. And frankly, Zuma's just much better at it. So, he's going, making that gesture. Yeah, if they were so, this was a and the MK party is a deliberate, and I think they've even said it. So reclaiming the ANC, so they want the iconography and that sort of thing. They can't get the name African National Congress, but they can get something pretty damn close to it. And yeah, these are people who just weren't on the ball. So I think, it speaks to dysfunction, it speaks to arrogance. Also a concern to the country as a whole.
I think definitely. Michael, what do you make of the story before we close up for today?
Well, one of the first observations, certainly true for me, is that I think the MK has taken most of the country by surprise. I remember listening to the very good poller Gareth Nonsen saying that, their early assessments were that, it wasn't likely to be able to do very much, because typically parties who had been established so soon before an election simply didn't have the time to generate any kind of impetus. And yet here we have seen Zuma and his lieutenants performing remarkably, and planting an idea, which I think is very clever, as Terence says. This is not. It's in a sense not so much an opposition to the ANC. This is the new ANC. This is what it's meant to be, what it always meant to be, And it makes sense that we've got all the iconography and the branding and so on, and we make the same sort of noises. So I think, yeah, a very astute political strategy going on here, but as Terence also says, a potentially dangerous one for the country. So to be watched
Interesting. I
with
mean,
some anxiety.
I didn't think the MK party would poll much higher than about sort of 4 or 5%. But you know, I mean, look, they still haven't had an election result, so this could, or they could take some beatings before the elections, especially if the ANC manages to hone in on them. But so far, the indication does seem to be that they're hovering around kind of somewhere between 10 and 13% of the vote, which would be a bit of a political earthquake. I mean, if
Look,
you consider
you
that the
know,
EFF, go ahead, Terence.
you finish and
That
answer
the
into the
EFF, of course, such has managed to put such a big imprint on South Africa's politics, despite the fact that it is probably only going to remain a 10% party.
Look, my sense of it, and I think that this addresses the point about new parties not being able to get traction, is that both MK and the EFF, I think, have or gambled on being able to take a chunk of the ANC's infrastructure with them. And certainly in Zuma's case, and I repeat this again and again, and that's not tautology because I've repeated it more than twice. Zuma, you know, is not universally disliked. There is a part of our population for whom he is like a second Mandela. And yeah, you know, so he comes with enormous brand recognition. Obviously, putting a lot of people, probably more people off, but he doesn't need to bring everyone. He needs to bring enough to, you know, be able to place himself on the scales.
It's very interesting to watch that Zuma is actually, I think, following in a pattern we've seen a lot in recent years all over the world of a politician arising who is very fiercely loved by a relatively small group of society, but big enough to give him a solid political wedge. And you can lay that onto kind of whichever politician you think that fits for. But I think there's quite a few examples around the world of that. So perhaps it's to some degree just a sign of how South Africa is following some global trends, actually, when it comes to our politics like that. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. We hope you found this show interesting. We will, of course, be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show wrap. We'll see you then. Cheers, everyone.